Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
try
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna
Alexander could tell us about it, but in Vrindavan, these kirtans will go on for days and days and days and days. How you doing, Julie? So, let's just go around the room, introduce yourself, say your name, and
maybe if something extraordinary happened for you this week, you'd let us know what it is. I think I started with Andrew last week, so let me start over with Robert this week. Say hello to the gang.
Hello. Hello. It's been a good week. I spent the weekend in meditation.
Nice. So you're Mr. Mellow tonight?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Nice to see you again. How you doing, Cher?
Okay, good. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, we went to Ithaca, and then we went to Ecstatic Chant.
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Great, great,
great. And Ithaca was amazing.
Yeah?
You could walk down the street, turn to your right, and see it, a waterfall.
That's pretty good.
It was really pretty amazing.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It was really, we took more than enough pictures.
Good. Good.
So we had a great time.
All right, yeah. Nice to hear.
It's nice to be in a healing environment.
Yeah. Probably you should go to the park sometimes, you know, and get away from all the traffic. Ron, how you been?
All right.
What's going on?
I'm just happy to be here. The highlight of my
meeting. Aren't you nice? Good to see you again. Say hello to the folks.
Hello. Hi, Ron. Rob Kurtz, how are you?
You're up.
My name is David. I'm, this past week, I was at Bhakti Fest out of Joshua Tree.
Oh, okay, cool.
It was 4 days of just full-on yoga, full-on bhakti bliss. Everybody was eating right and just loving 4,000 people.
Wow, amazing, amazing.
Just in the desert.
Yeah, fantastic.
Perfect.
Oh, great. Thanks for bringing back
the
bhav. So, you're up. You get to introduce yourself now and say if there was something extraordinary that happened this week for you.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
My name is Elaine, and I got quite a bit to my job, so I'm professing
in. Okay, good. Where are you teaching, Elaine?
I'm teaching, like, a foundation of environmental architecture, so it's like sense
Very nice. Good. Maybe he'll tell us something about that sometime. Maybe next week he'll tell us a little bit more if you're here. Great. Lauren, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you. I'm Lauren. Had an ordinary week. Extraordinary. I think the weather was fall. It was nice. Refreshing. Thank you guys.
That's a good moment. That's a good moment. Changing of the seasons, the cool breeze. Nice.
Hi, I'm Craig, and I'm here visiting my ever wonderful. My legs crazy sore from chasing around New York City.
Well, so and then every day for you is an extraordinary day because you get to be with Julie. That's great.
That's every great. Day is a couple of fancy.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
I'm Julie, and we just had some vegan ice cream from Sustainable New York. The most delicious vegan ice cream we've ever had. That's why we're late. You know, sorry.
That's a good excuse. Can't argue with that.
Peanut butter chips, and mint chocolate. I didn't have the sandwich this time, but yeah.
Goodness, okay. I hope you brought enough for everybody. Okay. No, that's great. That's great. You can do anything with a vegan menu. It's always lovely having you with us. Michael, say hi to the gang.
Hello.
What happened interesting to you this week?
Spiritually, I got to celebrate Radharani's
yeah.
last day at the Market Center. Saj festival,
right.
Food and mm-hmm. sweets.
Yeah.
And then in the material world, I was able to find a parking spot instantly.
Now you know there is a God.
Like literally, it took me an hour and 10 minutes to get here.
Uh-huh. Like, there's a spot right there. That's amazing.
Good.
Yeah. Miracles can happen.
Well, those are my stories.
Okay. Rodney, how you been?
Oh, it was great.
You were there?
He was there.
For Radhastami? Good for you.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Wonderful. Bhakti Center, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, is at 25 First Avenue, the corner of First Avenue and First Street. You see a nice new glass and chrome facade on the outside of the building. And it is the Bhakti headquarters in New York City, pretty much. There are beautiful Radha Krishna deities there. They're opening a cafe pretty soon. They have yoga classes. They have martial arts classes. The
Kirtan every Thursday.
Sunday feast.
Sunday feast every Sunday. All kinds of groovy stuff there. Maybe we'll do a class trip someday. To the Bhakti Center for some event down there. We can all go down. They start their Tuesday classes, I think, around 6:30 or something, right? So maybe we'll go there some Tuesday and then, you know, have a walking pilgrimage back up to Jiva Mukti afterwards for our regular.
We'll miss the prasad.
Oh, well. There's more where that came from, no doubt. You're up. Yep.
It's Yana. I also got to celebrate. Prasad. And then also celebrate
goodness gracious. Lucked out. That's nice. That's great.
So hopefully, ones are straight,
but
you can see them. Two vegan ladies, three dogs, three cats, a rabbit,
quite
a
wow.
Full house. Okay, good for you. Great. And things in the medical world are going well? Yes, Darcy this evening. Okay. And we'll all kind of go through the RT together this evening. So while Tiana's doing the RT,
Tiana's large, she doesn't have to do it yet.
Oh, we'll
yeah,
learn. All right, so who's going to do RT? You'll do the RT? You're dressed to the nines there, ready to go. Okay. All right. Alexandra, would you like to introduce yourself?
Certainly. My name is Sandra, and I feel very blessed to be here and just have the perfect sort of synergy and synchronicity to catch this evening. I missed it for a while, been away. And this week was lovely. I got to reconnect with devotees in Alachua, Florida, where there's a big community there to celebrate Radhasthami. I kind of got that bhakti fire back and wanting, really feeling the need to chant, kind of lost it a little bit. Seeing your shirt with Abbey Road, actually, I watched the George Harrison documentary just the other day, and that inspired me a lot as well. Just seeing that kind of time and place and the unfolding of his life. So, that's
great. Well, it's wonderful having you with us this evening. Thanks for joining us. Thanks so much. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Carl. I haven't been to sleep other than waking up every morning. And I love the necessity of some little litigation, so I appreciate what you said last week. It is a pleasure to talk to what you like doing.
Lovely. So it's nice to know that you can find something useful, and it's great to have you back.
My name is Amitai, and my extraordinary moment in the week was a few days ago. I think it was around Yom Kippur, which is a Jewish holiday, and I was going off the elevator, and with someone I don't know, and they said, have a good day, or have a nice day, when I exited on my floor, and I seized on this blessing, as if it was really meant, you know, with a huge amount of intention, and I had a good day.
Lovely. Lovely. It's a great elevator.
Blessing.
Elevator blessing.
Yeah. My name is Lillian. I had a really good yoga class this morning. I arrived exhausted and I went out refreshed.
Wonderful. Lovely, lovely to have a good class that rejuvenates you like that. Terrific.
Hello, everybody. My name is Andrew. It's wonderful to be able to sit here and picture my beautiful guru right there.
Yes. Ananda Mayina.
I'm able to do that right here. And it's beautiful. The spirit is helping here. The extraordinary thing this week for me was I'm against technology, as opposed to people walking around with smartphones all the time and abusing it. So I don't walk around with a cell phone. But however, on Sunday night, I found myself talking on my cell phone, texting on my cell phone, talking on the cell phone, talking on my landline phone. I'm in a conversation with my nephew in the Himalayas on the Facebook, and now I have a video conference with my other friend on Facebook in Brooklyn. And so I realized, gee, I guess I'm with the null generation.
You're with it.
And I liked it.
You liked it too. So have you renounced your Luddite ways?
No, I don't have my cell phone.
Now, let's see. My name is Joshua, and a good moment for me this week was that my classes started at Hofstra University, and I have 15 18-year-olds. Well, actually, one is 17 and one is 19, but the others are all 18. And there was good discussion. The course is on artistic representation of Holocaust history. And we talked about the differences between films and books that attempt to represent accurately what happened during the Holocaust period, and films and paintings and other creative works that interpret that history, and how far is too far, and what is gained and what is lost when history is interpreted by creative minds. And by gosh, they all got into the discussion. And that was a hoot. That was terrific to see that they're actually engaged with the topic and not just, you know, the one question that I despair of hearing is, you know, a hand goes up and someone says, Professor Green, is this going to be on the final? Mm-hmm. You know, because then they're not engaged with the subject. They're studying for the grade. So I told them, let's get the grade out of the way right up front. You all have A's. You all have A's. All you need to do to keep your A is come to class and do the reading. That's all you got to do, and you can keep your A. So don't think about the grade anymore. Let's get into the topic. Let's talk about this. This is really good stuff. And I think that seemed to have helped. So, yeah, nice energy there, you know? Good. Somehow I'm thinking, what if that were to happen in an office, in a job? What if someone were to say to you, don't worry about job security, don't worry about your pay. It's guaranteed. Let's get into the excitement of what we're doing here. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be something? All right, we can always dream, right? We're reading in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 5. Would you kindly repeat the invocation with me, and then we'll chant the verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Does everybody have a book, by the way? If you don't, just look on with your neighbor. Yat sankhyai, that dot under the end kind of turns a hard N into a ng. It's a. Your tongue's kind of at the back of your throat. This is on page 233. Yat sankhyai prapyate sthanam. The line over the 8. Excuse me? Yes, we can close the door. Right, thank you. So the first line, Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam, with the melody sounds like this. Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam. You try. Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam Tad Yogair Apigam Yate Tad Yogair Apigam Yate Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Yak Pashyati Sapashyati Yak Pashyati Sapashyati Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam Tad Yogair Apigam Yate Tad Yogair Apigam Yate Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Yak Pashyati Sapashyati Yak Pashyati Sapashyati. Anyone like to try? Julie?
Sankhyai prapyate sthanam
Pashyati.
Perfect. Well done. Well done. Anyone else like to try? Okay. Nicely done. Okay, translation on page 234. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Now, if this sounds vaguely like last week's verse, it's because it is. Last week's verse said, only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. And today's verse, one who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Here's the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by the two processes. By Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that a living entity is not a part and parcel of the material world, but of the supreme spirit whole. Consequently, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material world. His actions must be in some relation with the supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually in his constitutional position. In the first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter. And in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. Factually, both processes are the same. Although superficially, one process appears to involve detachment, and the other process appears to involve attachment. Detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna are one and the same. One who can see this sees things as they are. Okay, some very provocative ideas here. Very provocative ideas. Any questions right up front? Let me just start by asking whether just reading this prompts something in your mind. Is there something that strikes you right, wrong, indifferent? An alternate point of view, some interpretation?
Yeah, which way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first came to New York, I was married, and one of the Christian guys said, why don't you become a Christian devotee? I said, I don't like the haircut.
That's a good reason.
And he said, oh, you're attached to your hair. And my wife, who was a very wise person, said, no, his hair is attached to him. Because of
Yeah, I guess everything is a question of point of view, right? Reminds me of the story of I've told this story before, of the turtle who got mugged by two snails. He was crossing the road and he got mugged by two snails, and a cop car pulls up and the policeman gets out and looks down and says, okay, buddy, you want to explain what went on here? And the turtle looks up and says, gee, I don't know, officer, it all went so fast. We see everything from our own point of view. The philosophical inquiry that's being referenced here, Sankhya, is fascinating. We started to talk about this last week. Sankhya is literally a parallel with scientific research. Sankhya means to analyze the visible world, the tangible world, and the invisible world as well. The realm of subatomic particles also falls within this realm of Sankhya. It's called atomism. It's a part of the Sankhya analysis of the world. And the point's being made emphatically here. In fact, it's not only the last verse in this verse, but it's also anticipated again in the next verse. We'll jump ahead here, where Krishna tells Arjuna, merely renouncing activities, yet not engaging in devotional service of the Lord cannot make one happy, but a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay. So now he's saying that without coming to the conclusion of devotion, without coming to the point of recognizing yourself as something transcendent to the material elements, just analyzing the world is not in and of itself satisfying. There's a difference between knowing intellectually that I'm not this body, I'm the eternal soul, I'm the consciousness that animates this body, and realizing yourself as an eternal being and your relationship with Krishna, with the divine, because that realization of what happens on that spiritual level is where the bliss takes place. That's where the joy takes place. Knowledge is a good stepping stone to get there. But knowledge and realization are not the same thing. Those are two different things. You can know you're a soul. You can know you're not the body. But there's no joy in just knowing that. It's in understanding how to bring that knowledge into practical application that the happiness of the self emerges. There's a story that's told in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, where the compiler of the Vedic texts, Vyasa, also known as Vyasadeva or Srila Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva was meditating in his hut on the bank of the Ganges, and because Vyasa was a fully realized being, he foresaw the coming of the age of Kali, the world that we know. This was, according to Vedic reference, about 5,000 years ago, that the knowledge of the Vedic scriptures was first codified, that it was first posited in written form. And that was Vyasa, who was credited with having compiled the original Sanskrit texts. And Vyasa had compiled the original Veda and had divided that original Veda into four Chaturvedi, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva. Those are the four original Vedic texts, and had entrusted those Vedic texts into the hands of disciples, which is how the wisdom has come down to us today. Those are the original disciplic successions that's described in the fourth chapter. We read Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajar Shayo Vidu, that the wisdom of the self and transcendence comes down through cosmic time in a chain of teachers, the Guru Parampara, the disciplic college of realized masters, of which there are men and women, by the way. It's not just male. And Vyasa had then compiled supplementary texts to the Vedas. He had compiled the Brahmana texts and the Itihasas and the Upanishads and all of this marvelous wisdom, but he was feeling despondent. He wasn't happy. You'd think that someone who had the prescience, the visionary ability to see that in years to come, in centuries to come, people would be tragically weighted down by the symptoms of this age. Life was not always thus. The world that we see around us was not always in such a condemnable and tragic condition. There were ages, yugas, prior to the one we know, when the world was a happy place, where there was no war, and where life was longer because people were not so distressed. They were not living with stress. They were breathing easier. Their lifespan was longer because their lives were stress-free and they were happy. And in fact, the environment in those previous yugas was so ideal that it only rained at night. And the harvests were abundant. And there was very little disease. And the world was a more spiritually oriented place. But as with all things in the material creation, there is a deterioration over time. Welcome to Kali Yuga. We're living at the bottom of the barrel. This is the fourth in the cycle of four yugas. Kali Yuga is described in the 12th canto, or the 12th division of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The symptoms of the world we know are described there. That people will be of shorter stature. There are footprints of Krishna in Vrindavan. He must have been 9 feet tall. I mean, the footprint is huge. It's immense. People in previous ages were much larger. They were much physically taller than we know today. Lifespan was longer. In Kali Yuga, the span of life has reduced to maybe 100 years. In previous yugas, people lived hundreds and hundreds of years. In this age, according to the Bhagavatam, and remember, this is a prediction, because the Bhagavatam was compiled prior to the advent of Kali Yuga. So this is all a forecasting of what would come. It's described there that there would be a great deterioration in compassion. That people would have very, very little compassion. Intelligence would dwindle. People would not be able to retain. We need books now. We can't retain things just by hearing them. In previous yugas, there was an oral reception of knowledge. You would sit at the feet. Tad vigyanartham sagurum eva abhigachchet samitpani srotriyam brahmanishtam. And the Upanishads is described that to achieve tad vigyan, that vigyana, that wisdom of the Vedic text, you come before your teacher with sagurum eva abhigachchet, with firewood in your hands. In those days, there was a sacrificial fire. And you would, instead of paying paper money, you know, or credit card charges, you would bring something to your teacher. You'd bring if you were from a wealthy family, you might bring cloth or gold or some wealth of some kind. If you came from a less well-to-do family, you might bring a little sack of rice. There's the story of Sudama, Krishna's friend. Krishna, when he was a child, his friend was named Sudama, his best friend. And they went to school together. Krishna went on to become a great king in Dwarka. Sudama was a Brahmin. And as a Brahmin, he was not interested in power or wealth. He studied the texts. And his wife was always kind of complaining that, you know, look, Sudama, I love you dearly, but it's kind of spare here. Our life is a little Spartan. Can you do something about that? You know, I'm not asking for a lot. Go see your friend Krishna. I'm sure he'd be willing to help you. You were best buddies. You loved each other when you were children. I'm sure. And Sudama didn't want to bother Krishna with, you know, some personal things. But his wife was saying, look, we really need this. Okay, so to satisfy her, he went around to his neighbors and he said, can you give me some rice, please? I have to bring some gift to Krishna. I can't go empty-handed. So he took the edge of his cloth, and the neighbors all threw in handfuls of rice, and he tied that cloth up on the end of a stick, and out he went walking to Dwarka. And when he got there, Krishna was on his throne. He was the king. And when it was announced that this impoverished Brahmin had come to see him, Krishna looked, and when he saw that it was Sudama, he started crying and he got off his throne and ran to Sudama and gave him a big hug and said, come, sit. And he put him on the throne and he started washing his feet. He got a bowl of water and washing his feet, which is, you know, that's considered the highest form of of compliment that you can pay someone is to wash their feet. So after his long journey, he wanted to see that he was comfortable. And he was asking, how have you been? My gosh, it's been forever since we've seen each other. Tell me everything. I want to know everything that's been happening with you. And they talked until the wee hours of the night. And Krishna looked and saw that Sudama had brought this little sack. I say, did you bring a present for me? And Sudama was trying to hide it because he was embarrassed. He was here with this big palace and all this riches and wealth around him. And he's hiding, and Krishna grabs it. And he opens it up and he says, oh, my favorite. And he was just so happy with that gift. Next morning, Sudama said goodbye to Krishna and set off for home. And when he got to where he thought his home was, he said, gee, I must have taken a wrong turning, because before him was this magnificent city with palaces and paved roads and fruit-bearing trees and men and women walking in, you know, resplendent in their silks and jewels. And Sudama looked around, and then he saw that this beautiful woman before him was his wife. Now, normally they live in a little hut, and she's dressed in a simple cotton cloth, and he's got his little cloak. And she was there, beautiful, and then he realized that because Krishna had been pleased by his humble little offering of a sack of rice, he had reciprocated and fulfilled Sudama's wish and his wife's wish, even without having to be asked. And there are all kinds of points that can be drawn from this simple little story about Krishna and Sudama, about you don't have to ask, you know. Just if you are serving with love, everything comes, you know. There's no need for, please give us this day our daily bread. You don't need to ask for daily bread. Prabhupada used to say that the birds get up in the morning and they don't pray, please give me my daily worm. The worm is there. that you can save your time and just focus on what contribution can I make? Not what can I get, but what can I do for others? So anyway, I forgot where I started with all that. Where were we?
You were talking about the four Vedas and Vasa writing down the four Vedas.
Right.
He was not happy.
Vasudev was not happy. Vyasa. Vyasadev was not happy at all. And so even though he had written all of these things, yes, and if you go, so if you're coming, whatever your mean, whatever your facility is, when you go to the guru, sa guru meva bigatschet. So you can bring, just collect some firewood for the sacrificial fire. That's an acceptable tuition for your classes with your guru. Anyway, Vyasadeva is there, despondent, seeing that this terrible future lies ahead for humanity, and having compiled these wonderful texts, but he's still not happy. The spiritual master knows the heart and mind of the disciple. Vyasa's guru was Narada. Narada, great son of Brahma. Narada, sensing his disciple's despondency, appeared on the scene and said, Vyasa, what's up? Vyasadeva said, I don't know why I'm still sad. I've written all of these texts. I've put everything down for the benefit of humanity, but I'm still feeling unhappy. And Narada said, of course you're still feeling unhappy. No one's happy just with philosophy. You need some bhakti. You need to compile the stories of Krishna and his life. And that's when Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, where that leads in 10 cantos up to the intimate stories of Krishna growing up as a child in Vrindavan and then dancing with the gopis and going on to bring down evildoers and all of the great adventures that took place. And in order to, there it is, it's the Krishna book that Michael's holding up there. That's the commentary on the 10th canto that Srila Prabhupada wrote way back in 1970, because he didn't know how long he was going to live. So he wanted to make sure that we had these stories so that the bhakti would be there. The bhakti would be stimulated along with the philosophy. So here the point is being made in this 4th, 5th, and 6th verses of chapter 5, that one who knows the position reached by means of analytical study, one who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be one and the same, sees things as they are. By going inside the moments and details of creation, we're meant to find God. We're meant to find God in the moments and elements and details of the life around us. That's analytical research. That's real analytical research. Just labeling something is not understanding it. Calling something a particle or calling something some form of energy does not impart understanding of that thing. You might be able to manipulate it by understanding its behavior, but the true deep understanding of the world around us is that this is a reflection of an eternal realm. And by studying this world, we can understand that eternal world. Bhaktivinod Thakur, a great Krishna devotee scholar in the 19th century, described that the material world is like a dictionary of the spiritual world, and that you can understand the nature of eternity by studying the nature of impermanence. Study the world around you, and you will get a glimpse of the eternal realm. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, first of all, the fact that there is differentiation, that we are individuals, is an indication that there is also individuality in the eternal realm. Those philosophical schools which come to the conclusion that after full realization, you lose your individuality and simply merge into the totality of Brahman energy are partial understanding of the position of the eternal soul. The eternal soul is one with the totality of all energy and quality. But quantitatively, we remain individuals, and it's that individuality that allows love to happen. Krishna is a person, and we are persons, and because we are individuals, love can take place. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes something that will be very helpful, I think, in this regard. He described three levels of vision. The first level of vision is the literal level. You look at something and you say, okay, there is a tree. There's a tree there. A somewhat deeper level of seeing, of perceiving, is what we might call the symbolic level. That you look at a tree, what's a symbol? What's a symbol? I'm not wearing my wedding ring, but a wedding ring is a symbol, right? It's a signifier. It represents something bigger than itself. That little tangible object represents a relationship. It represents a commitment. It represents family. It represents the love and devotion that bind two people together. So there's a larger picture represented by that small tangible symbol. From the bhakti perspective, a symbol is something more than just the representation of a bigger idea. In the bhakti perspective, the symbol is itself what is being represented. For example, the deity on the altar. To look at the deity on the altar materially, you might say, well, it's a picture of Krishna. It represents a higher idea. That's a material perception of the image of Krishna. A deeper level of understanding, what we might call the rasic level, the word rasa means devotional emotion. On the rasic level of seeing, this is not just a representation of Krishna. It is non-different from Krishna. Or let's take that example again of a tree. On the literal level, I see a tree. On the symbolic level, I might say, well, this is it's a physical body encasing a soul. There's life within that tree, which is why it's growing. It's how it's able to absorb water, create fruits. From the rasic level of vision, the deepest level of vision, I look and I don't see a tree. I don't see a body housing a soul. What I see is a soul that is a spark of Krishna. And therefore, by seeing that tree, I'm reminded of Krishna and my love and devotion is stimulated. Okay. So from the bhakti perspective, the analytical study of the world around us leads to inspiration at every moment. Everything we see at every moment can be an impetus to ecstatic love. I think I've given the example in the past of Brother Lawrence, who was a French monk who joined a monastery in Paris after having been in the French army. This was 15th century, I think, 1500s. And he was a jolly, husky fellow who ended up becoming the cook for the monastery. And he was fond of saying that when I'm in the kitchen and there's clutter and noise around me all the time, and people are asking for this and people are asking for that, I feel the same sanctity that I feel when I'm in the church sanctuary. Which means, of course, that the spiritual experience is not limited to any one place. It can happen everywhere. After 13 years in that monastery, he walked outside one day and saw a tree and fainted. His level of vision through all those years of prayer and service permitted him to see past the literal level, past the material symbolic level, to the rasic level, and the magnificence of that creation finally penetrated to his heart, and he swooned and fainted and came to about 5 hours later. Seeing a tree. The miracle of a tree. How often do we think about that? So, therefore, in the next verse, Krishna says, merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. And then going on to the seventh verse, one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. They're always working. Such a man is never entangled. Whatever you're doing, you've transcended the tensions, the stress, the anxieties, the entanglement of that work. Why? Because you're not in this world anymore. You're not even here. You're gone. I remember being with Prabhupada and really thinking, I don't know who this person is or where he is. I see him sitting here, but boy, he's someplace else. And it's true. He was, that deepest part of himself was always reserved. It was in the spiritual world. This is not just a poetic idea. This is actually supported by bhakti philosophy. That in one sense, we're not even here right now. The self, the true self, does not become a part of the material world at any stage. There is a connection between you, you the pure being within the body, and Krishna, the supreme being, that is unbreakable. It is eternal, it is pure, it is beautiful, it is joyful, and it is absolutely unbreakable. Our position is kind of like in a dream where you're lying in bed, but you're someplace else. And during the duration of that dream, you really believe that you're someplace else, when actually you're not someplace else, you're over there. In the same way, the soul is never really separated from Krishna. We're never out of the spiritual world. But because we have become so conditioned to identifying with this material life and the body that houses us, we think we're here. How's that for a mind blower? All right, that's enough. Let's open this up. Yeah, Purnima.
I was reading
it's really kind of warm in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is
kind of warm. Yeah. Can we open the door?
Well, two things.
Yeah.
Three things, actually. There's a book I'm going to loan you, which I think you'll like. It's about this particular Jewish family. And at one point, I read about Tracy in Vienna, like John Flynn. And anyway, Wittgenstein, there seems to be a thing where all these people who are very thoughtful, but somehow so depressed, Wittgenstein's family, three people committed suicide, his brothers. And he said about philosophy. And he said, yes, I even thought about suicide even before them. And I was saying this to my boyfriend, like, why is it that someone who's so intelligent that would be a philosopher? He said that many people who consider themselves self-realized become very depressed and become suicidal. Krishnamacharya said that the only way in this Kali Yuga age is to evolve. That is the only way to really be in your
to avoid that depression?
Well, obviously, I was just throwing some things at you because Krishnamacharya is saying, mm-hmm. Father of Mahamruga.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're pointing to something tragic, really, which is that so many sensitive, brilliant people die. They die young, they commit suicide, they die in some tragic way. It's as though seeing deeper into the human condition, if you don't know this connection, this immutable connection with God, with Krishna, seeing the human condition leads only to despair. I mean, if you look around at what we're dealing with in the world, Primo Levi, who survived Auschwitz, brilliant writer and a chemist, actually, by profession, by training, died in the, I think it was in the 70s. 70s or 80s. And there's the general consensus that he committed suicide. Why? When Holocaust denial came on the scene. When people began claiming that the Holocaust never happened. Or revisionism, that it happened, but it was nowhere near the scale or depth that the Jews make it out to be. And having gone through that experience himself, the idea that the world would not believe, that the world has not learned, and to deny that it ever even happened was more than he could bear. Dylan Thomas, the great Welsh poet, you know how Dylan Thomas died? He was a terrible drunkard. He fell off a porch in a drunken stupor and fell into a rose bush, and the thorns cut his forehead, and when his head hit the dirt, bacteria in the soil penetrated that cut and he died from falling in a rose bush. And how many of our great heroes and icons from the 60s OD'd on drugs. Because there's something about seeing deeply into the human condition that's so tragic. Without Krishna, you know, without knowledge of the self and our relationship with God, what is there to live for? To get more stuff. Rodney.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at share, I was looking at the flowers, I see they're both the same.
Oh, you old softy.
Where are you? She's in a present when you're looking at the flowers, so it's not present. It's like you're looking at something and you don't see, oh, Rodney,
you always have a surprise, Rodney.
You know, it's like you look at the world as a balance. How many say it's balance? Raise your hand. I
just sure. Yeah. What is it that Thumper says in Bambi? You can call me Flower if you want to.
That's why I bring it here. But anyway. I felt my life was unbalanced. The mountains there, the tree, the water, everything is beautiful. It's nice. So we see what you could see is beautiful, but what you have inside, if it isn't beautiful, then you got a problem. So that's when you go unbalanced. So I took the problem and used it as a tool with the practice of yoga. And I said, well, this is going to be good. I will get better. So I believed in the self, and I said, I turned the energy from the problem, and it gave me the great world of happiness. That's a gift that you can use. Whatever you have that you're looking for is going to find your happiness for you in this world. Because you have to find something to make you happy. And actually, he talks about God, and Sharon too, she says it a lot. I would say God's in the world of suffering, and he's in the world of samadhi. So you have to take one or the other, and I chose the suffering and had to become what I was. So that's how I got into yoga, and I use it as a tool. So how does it do with the yoga? Do it balances out by taking the energy from one and putting it into the other. I think of what I had, doing the postures, and becoming free. At the end was actually, at the time, I was sort of attached to suffering. But who wants to be attached to that? Nobody. The thing is, how to get out of it. Like, so I did the yoga, and then the yoga, I felt that would free me. And actually, from the energy from one, powerful is hardships. You could take it and put it like a very hardship and put it to a posture, and you know something that would be beautiful.
Yeah, those of you who don't know, Rodney, earlier in life, I hope you don't mind me talking about you, was a very accomplished pugilist, he's a boxer, and had been quite seriously damaged, I would say, from all of that physical contact. Is that accurate?
That was actually not the boxing, it was in football that I was kicked in the head. And that like caused brain damage and a lot of other things. And, I mean, where you're going up is there. You'll die someday. I was already gone, but I'm back.
Yeah.
It happened many times. Yeah. I have a cold in my head, that's why I don't have time. So it's two different things, but actually what it was my road to stay alive and one day be here to teach.
And we get to have you here, and we're lucky.
A lot of people happy, myself, and came out to be enjoyed for others. They used to pick me out and say, show them what you did. Here I am standing in the head for an hour. They asked me and demonstrated, and I said, fine. Go ahead, and I did it. The next thing down, and he says, what was wrong with you? And I said, nothing. What was wrong before? And I had compulsion to death. How did I? Well, I had everything. He says, what do you have now? I said, nothing. I'm happy.
So stick with it. Stick with it. We have a few more minutes because we're going to do an artik this evening, right? Anyone else want to kind of jump in here? So why don't we make this, Andrew, yes.
I'll put my two cents
sensitive.
Please.
So it seems to me as though when I listen to, well, not listen to sermons in the Christian church where I've worked for the last 16 years, it seems to me as though people take facts from the Bible and give their own interpretation of them. And a lot of them vary from one another. So it's, is that what you do with the Bhagavad Gita? Does everyone read the Bhagavad Gita and give their own? But to give an example of that, in the defense of the Christian teachings, the phrase, give us this day our daily bread, I heard in a sermon one time, is not meant to mean a piece of bread that you're going to eat to sustain your body, but a piece of spiritual food from God to sustain your spiritual belief and path.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I would say that Prabhupada was referring to the wrong tech.
Yeah, Prabhupada had great respect for anyone who followed their faith sincerely, from that level that you're describing. People who manipulated faith for material gain of some kind, he had only disdain for that. That's not love, that's doing business with God. So that's an important distinction that you're pointing to. That even the chanting of Hare Krishna, in a sense, is supplicating God for something. It's saying, please engage me in your service. So it's that higher definition that you're giving to give us this day our daily bread. That's a nice distinction. Thank you very much for raising that. Well, no, I'll admit I go out on a limb sometimes with some of my interpretations of things. If I permit myself to do that, it's because I'll never compromise the fundamental pillars of the Gita philosophy, which are that we are not the body, we're eternal souls. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhakti is the path of yoga that unites us with Krishna. And as far as possible, I will make reference to verses in the Gita to support what I'm describing. But it is a risk. It is a risk. And I'm always asking myself, actually, how far is too far? When I take you guys on these little journeys, you know, and we go into the realms of, you know, science or whatever, I'm always asking myself, how far is too far? I don't have the right to distort these teachings. I have a responsibility to make them understandable by perhaps finding analogies or stories or anecdotes that can elucidate what the teachings mean. But I do not have the right to change the teachings. Good point. Why don't we make this our homework assignment for next week? Find an example where you can go from the literal level of seeing to the symbolic level, and from the symbolic to the rasic level. Find an incident, an example, a moment in the week ahead when you take that extra breath, that extra beat, to look deeper into what's going on. And so you go from the literal vision of something to the symbolic, and from the symbolic to the rasic. Can we do that? Didn't we have a homework? We had an homework like that, assignment like that for last week, didn't we?
No, 2 weeks ago.
Well, 2 weeks ago. Did we ever discuss?
I couldn't make it, so I thought you guys discussed it last week.
We did, right? We did
there
go
were
into some of
the people that did.
Yeah, we had a couple. Good. So let's see if we can get more than two for next week. All right, great. We're going to do RT. Our treats this evening. That bowl of those are tomatoes from my garden at home on Long Island. And there's also some sweet mustard, so you might like to put the two together. It's a nice combination. What else is over there? That's it? Okay, so we've got tomato prasadam. tonight. So come on, join me up. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. So anyone who would like to learn how to do the RT, everyone come up. We'll stand, we'll go to the altar. I'll walk us through, as Michael is doing the offering, I'll explain what he's doing, and if anyone would like to do the RT sometime, just let me or Michael know, and we'll take you through it and give you a chance to do that. Okay?
So there's a lot of us, so you got to get really nice. All
right. Just two people to run it down.
There we go.
Wow. Now we're doing these.
Right here.
Took about a year.
That is the slowest
one. We're not the body, we're the spirit soul. Just in case photo.
All right. One.
You guys just take the photo.
One, two.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you.
Took about a year to get that, like, shaking of the left hand out.
You have another
yoga. It's really awkward.
No.
I see that. You're nervous, like.
Oh, there are coaches that do that for like an hour and a half. They're just like this. All these like, because like, they'll be like, temples where they'll be like, huge acharya lineage that they have to offer it to. Three different statues of Radha, three different statues of, you know, of like, and so they're just sitting there for like 20 minutes, like an hour and a half, and they do so much. They're offering fruit, or they're offering candle, or they're offering ghee, they're offering, and it goes on for like an hour and a half, and they're sitting there for an hour and a half.
Yeah, just mustard.
What I've been taught is many paths, one source. Are you doing your apprenticeship?
Yes.
Are you doing your apprenticeship? This is fantastic. What do you think? Music? All right, let's just do it.